Today, on this episode of the PureDirect Special Spotlight.
To begin with, we saw results from the CLL17 trial, which is really the first direct comparison of the two dominant modern CLL treatment paradigms.
Today, Drs. Weird and O'Brien joined the podcast to discuss CLL at ASH 2025, CLL17, in this PureDirect Special Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative's supporters.
Hello, I'm Dr. Susan O'Brien, Professor of Medicine in the Division of Hematology Oncology at the University of California Irvine School of Medicine.
And I'm Dr. William Weirda, Professor of Medicine in the Department of Leukemia at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston.
It's nice to be here with you, Bill.
My pleasure, Susan.
So in our first video segment, we reviewed some really impactful CLL studies that were presented this week at the American Society of Hematology annual meeting in Orlando. Let's keep the conversation going and review a few more. To begin with, we saw results from the CLL17 trial, which is really the first direct comparison of the two dominant modern CLL treatment paradigms, continuous BTK inhibition versus fixed duration BCL2-based therapy. And not surprisingly, maybe that's why it was presented in the plenary session. So let's start with that trial. You want to comment on the trial, Bill?
Sure, I'll be happy to summarize the trial. So the CLL17 trial actually was presented as a plenary presentation at ASH this year. This is a three-arm randomized trial that enrolled over 900 patients to one of three different treatment arms. Ibrutinib continuous therapy, fixed duration treatment with either venetoclax-obinutuzumab, as it was given in the CLL14 trial, or ibrutinib plus venetoclax, which was given as it was given in the CAPTIVATE study, as well as in the GLOW study. And the endpoint that was reported on this study was a non-inferiority endpoint looking at three-year progression-free survival. The three-year progression-free survival rate for venetoclax-obinutuzumab was 81.1%. It was 79.4% for ibrutinib plus venetoclax and 81% for ibrutinib monotherapy. And this was a trial that did demonstrate non-inferiority across those treatments, and particularly the importance here being at the three-year time point, similar outcomes were seen for progression-free survival with continuous targeted therapy versus fixed duration therapy. The investigators looked at responses and the CR rate for venetoclax-obinutuzumab was 51.5%. For ibrutinib-venetoclax, it was 46.2%. And not surprisingly, for ibrutinib monotherapy, it was 8.3%. We know that we don't get deep remissions with ibrutinib monotherapy, but we do expect good deep remissions with venetoclax-based combinations. Both venetoclax-obinutuzumab and venetoclax-ibrutinib. And in fact, the MRD4 undetectable rate in blood for venetoclax-obinutuzumab was 73.3%, and that's consistent with what was seen in CLL14. It was lower for patients who received venetoclax-ibrutinib at 47.2%. And that was somewhat surprising and is a bit lower than has been reported for other studies. Not surprisingly, they did not report any undetectable MRD patients who received ibrutinib monotherapy as continuous treatment. The benefit was consistent across IGHV mutation status. And this trial did include patients who had TP53 abnormalities, and similar outcomes were seen so far for that subgroup. Now, could you maybe for us summarize the toxicity?
Yeah, so as you pointed out, the response rate so far and the progression-free survival are pretty much identical across the board. I'm talking overall response rates. As you pointed out, CR rates are different. But we do see some differences in toxicity. And the first place I'll mention is where you would not be surprised to see it, which is cardiac toxicity, right? So the cardiac toxicity was the highest with ibrutinib at about 35%. After that, IV was kind of intermediate. And then venetoclax obinutuzumab, not surprisingly, had the lowest cardiac events because it doesn't have a BTK inhibitor in it. However, the contrast was that there was a little more GI symptomatology as well as hematologic AEs with the venetoclax-containing arm. We know that we see significant neutropenia with the use of venetoclax that was both in the other arms. So I guess the big question, Bill, is what are your thoughts about this so far? Is this practice changing in any way, or what does this make you do? Does it make you want to change anything you do?
Well, for myself, it probably won't change much in terms of what I do. I've been very much aligned with time-limited therapy for patients with CLL, getting them into a deep remission and off treatment, and am less inclined to prioritize continuous therapy for patients if they're able to receive fixed duration treatment. And there's challenges with each of those strategies. For the continuous therapy, if we're talking about ibrutinib, there is the long-term exposure and risk, continuous risk essentially for drug-related adverse events and toxicities. And in contrast, this trial demonstrated tolerability and very good responses with venetoclax-based treatment, both with venetoclax plus obinutuzumab and venetoclax or venetoclax plus ibrutinib. We didn't get a sense from this trial if there's a significant difference between those two venetoclax outcomes for the two venetoclax arms. The trial wasn't designed to make that comparison. It was with the intent of making comparison between ibrutinib versus either venetoclax obinutuzumab or venetoclax ibrutinib. But again, my preference is for time-limited therapy. The question will be, will this inspire community practice physicians to more readily adapt venetoclax-based therapy, because we know most of the patients, the majority of patients in the community, are currently receiving continuous therapy. And I think that also raises the question about the relevance for this trial, because most community practice physicians in the U.S. now aren't using ibrutinib in the frontline setting. They're using one of the second generation BTK inhibitors. So there are a number of nuances to this study, but I do think that it supports the use of fixed duration treatment in the frontline setting with an expectation of having a reasonable duration of remission and getting patients off treatment for a reasonable period of time.
I totally agree with you. I mean, I favor fixed duration. The one group where I still use continuous are the patients with 17p deletions or p53 mutations. So I think it will be very interesting as we get longer follow-up to see if that group still benefits from the continuous exposure.
Absolutely. Well, Susan, that's about all the time we have for this segment. I want to thank you for this great conversation, and thank you also for your great insights.
It's been my pleasure, Bill. Thank you.
And thank you to our audience. Please watch the additional videos in this series, where we'll explore more CLL news from ASH 2025.
And that's today's special spotlight. Thank you for joining us for this episode of PeerDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at peerdirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions, please leave us a review on your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@peerdirect.com. Listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also download our Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing Medical News Roundup and just ask, "What's my flash briefing?" Thanks today to our guests, Drs. Wierda and O'Brien. Join me next time for an episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.